Counsel for defendants.
I'm Fred Sperling, and I represent Michael Jordan. This is an appeal from the district court's order determining that defendant's ad is commercial speech. Defendants used Mr. Jordan's identity in conjunction with both defendants' brand logo and their brand slogan to promote the sale of goods and services of Juul to both its existing and potential customers. So let's start with the brand logo. Brand logo here, Juul Osco. The ad doesn't merely use the trade name Juul Osco to identify Juul as the speaker in the ad. Over many years, Juul created a valuable trademark in the Juul Osco brand logo, which it registered specifically for all the goods and services it sells. And the ad prominently displays the Juul trademark and embellishes it with a distinctive stylization and design that Juul uses as its brand logo consistently. Moreover, and importantly, the ad uses the brand slogan in conjunction with defendants' national uses the brand logo in conjunction with defendants' national advertising slogan, "Good things are just around the corner," right here with the arrow pointing up to the brand logo. The advertising slogan is part of what SuperValu calls its big brand idea, which is meant, and this is how SuperValu puts it, to demonstrate to consumers the many good things that are right there at their local SuperValu store. And finally, again, the ad incorporates the advertising slogan into the ad statements about Mr. Jordan by describing him as also being, quote, just around the corner. Now, instead of trying to defend the district court's ruling on the actual ad that's at issue in this case, defendants completely ignore the national advertising slogan as if it wasn't in the ad, and they argue against a per se rule that Mr. Jordan has never proposed. They also ignore the admissions of Juul's witnesses that Juul knew that using its logo and its slogan, as it did, was, as these witnesses testified, a great tie-in that would entice people to think about Juul Osco and think about the products that it sells. Now, there are lots of ways that Juul could have congratulated Mr. Jordan, even publicly, without engaging in commercial speech. Juul could have congratulated Mr. Jordan and used its actual name, Juul Food Stores, Inc. Juul could have congratulated Mr. Jordan and used its trade name, Juul Osco. Juul even could have gone further and congratulated Mr. Jordan and used its logo, depending on the rest of the contents of the ad. And in fact, the two examples on page 4 of defendant's brief show that Juul knows how to offer congratulations without using its advertising slogan or otherwise engaging in commercial speech. Here are those two examples. The Juul Osco logo is there, but there's no advertising slogan, and there's no tie-in to the statements. So
what about the backdrop of the city? Comparing it to just around the corner.
Well, the difference is just around the corner was registered with the USPTO specifically as a way of marketing to existing and potential customers all of Juul's products and services. And the PTO granted trademark registration for that national advertising slogan. These ads are very different that way. And it's interesting. Further in defendant's brief, they show examples of what they acknowledge is commercial advertising. They use the advertising slogan in those ads. So they know how to just congratulate someone if that's what they want to do. But that's not what they did here. Juul did none of these things. Instead, they used the brand logo and the advertising slogan, which they then linked with and integrated into their statements about Mr. Jordan. And they did this for exactly the reason the Juul witnesses testified, to promote Juul's products and services to its existing and potential customers. And that's what commercial speech is. I'd like to turn to the issue of specific products and services.
Before you do that, isn't that the same thing? I mean, take away the other information, but you've got Juul Osco there. Aren't they attempting to sell products by congratulating this community center?
Well, I think it's fair to say that everything a corporation does or should do should be to promote itself. And certainly there is an argument that when you use a trade name, or even more here, a brand logo, that it has a commercial purpose, but that's not the issue before this court. And Mr. Jordan does not propose a per se rule I think there's strong arguments that could be made on either side of this, but that's not our case at all. The substantial difference here, the critical difference, is that you have three things going on at once. You have the supersized brand logo. You have the national advertising slogan. And remember, when they obtained registration from the USPTO, they said, that brand logan, that national advertising slogan, is to promote our goods and services. That's what they said when they wanted trademark registration for it, and they use it consistently in their advertising. And then they link it in to the statements about Mr. Jordan just around the corner again. And so you have three things going on at once here, synergistically reinforcing one another, very different from simply putting the brand logo at the bottom of this congratulatory ad. So
I'd like to clarify before we go any further with the discussion of whether this does or does not qualify as commercial speech and determine whether that is that distinction is a complete defense here. It was a little unclear to me based on the trial court record that was the case. I understand that on summary judgment this was litigated as a First Amendment defense. As opposed to a statutory defense?
Yes, defendants raised as an affirmative defense the issue of commercial speech, their position being that if the ad was not commercial speech, it was fully protected under the First Amendment.
Well, it also wouldn't fall within the statute if it's not commercial speech, because the Lanham Act is addressed to misleading commercial speech, and well, so are the state statutory claims and the state common law claim.
For purposes of this case, Mr. Jordan's claims are based, his damage claims in particular, on the fact that this was commercial speech.
Right. I mean, that's an element of the claim under the federal statute as well as the state statutes and the common law cause of action, right?
I think there are conceivably situations in which non-commercial speech might still be actionable. We're not bringing those claims.
So if this is non-commercial speech,
if this court determines that the district court was correct in concluding this is not commercial speech, then that would end Mr. Jordan's claims.
Based on?
The claims are based on the misappropriation of his identity. So
the defense is based on?
The defense is based on the defendants raise an affirmative defense that the ad is not commercial speech.
Okay. I'm trying to get to what the legal implication of that conclusion might be. And as I understand it, it means that this speech receives full First Amendment protection.
That's their argument.
That ordinarily doesn't constitute a complete defense. There's a standard for evaluating First Amendment claims, even when the speech is entitled to maximum protection under the First Amendment. And that step was skipped, it seems to me. That's what I'm trying to get at here. And it was skipped apparently by stipulation or by concession, or I'm not clear.
Mr. Jordan's claim is based on the ad being commercial speech.
Okay. What that requires us to do is to say that the First Amendment offers a complete defense in this situation, and I'm not sure that's legally correct. But you're not. You apparently stipulated that it does.
Well, we didn't stipulate, but we defendants presented an affirmative defense that if there were no commercial content to the speech, if it were purely a congratulatory ad with no commercial content, then it would be protected by the First Amendment, and the district court ruled in the defendant's favor on that basis.
Right, I understand that, but we're the Court of Appeals, and what we say becomes the law, right? And so we have to be satisfied that the First Amendment either does or doesn't provide a complete defense in this situation, or we have to decide this as a matter of statute. And that's why I'm asking the question. If this is not commercial speech, it's not in the Lanham Act, it's not in the
Illinois Privacy Act.
Right, and it doesn't constitute the tort of
misappropriation
of publicity. So then we can decide the case on statutory grounds rather than constitutional grounds. But that's not how it was litigated. I recognize that. But there, it seems to me that the step of applying standard First Amendment analysis was skipped. Everybody conceded that if this is non-commercial speech, it's quote-unquote fully protected and didn't take the analysis any further.
I think there are some circumstances, Your Honor, where non-commercial speech would still appropriately be subject to an injunction or other relief. We're not seeking that relief here.
Okay.
I see my time has expired, so I'll retain the remainder of the time for my rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Sperling. Ms. Zimmerman?
May it please the Court, my name is Rachel Zimmerman, and I represent Jewel Osco and Super Value. And I think I'll start where Judge Sykes left off, and that is with respect to the First Amendment versus statutory issue, just to clarify. The way that I understand it, the Court addressed this as a First Amendment commercial versus non-commercial speech determination and determined that it was not commercial speech. And therefore, the right of publicity statute of Illinois and the Lanham Act claims that were brought by Jordan cannot apply because they cannot be any broader in their definition of commercial speech than the First Amendment. So I think it's correct that if the First Amendment defines this as non-commercial speech, then there can be none of the claims that have been brought by Jordan. There may be other claims that could be brought if it was libel, for example, false speech. That's different, even when it is non-commercial. The statutes, though, that were brought, I think that there is an issue with respect to whether the definition of commercial speech under those statutes is narrower than the First Amendment, and that could be. So I think this case can be decided under either ground. It can be decided as an affirmance of the district court's determination that this is not commercial speech under the First Amendment, but it could alternatively be decided and affirmed by a determination that under the Lanham Act and the Illinois statutes definition of commercial speech, that's something narrower, and this is non-commercial speech as applied to those statutes. Addressing the First Amendment issue, the district court correctly determined that Jewel's tribute to Jordan was not commercial speech. In particular, under both the Supreme Court articulations and the Seventh Circuit articulations of the standard for commercial speech under the First Amendment, the courts have declared that the touchstone for commercial speech is speech that proposes no more than a commercial transaction. And that is not the case with respect to the Jewel ad. Now, the courts have given a lot of guidance in what to focus on in making the determination of commercial versus non-commercial speech, and I would submit that the issues that Jordan's counsel is focusing on are the wrong issues. The court has to focus on the complete speech, the full content, in context. The discussions of the courts have been content, form, and context, in particular, that those are more important than intent. Now, in the Jewel tribute to Jordan, do you mind if I put this back up here? Looking at this page in its full context, and by the way, in looking at the full context, you have to consider where it appeared in a commemorative issue of Sports Illustrated that was addressed entirely to Jordan's accomplishment in the Hall of Fame. Every single thing in this was about that event that
except
had just
for the
happened.
Advertisements.
Well,
this is goodwill advertising by these companies that were invited to take out space in the edition. This is a very common form of promoting oneself in the marketplace, is participating in these kinds of goodwill advertising opportunities.
And I think the district
people
court...
People do it in church bulletins. They do it in high school yearbooks. They do it in Michael Jordan commemorative editions.
And, Your Honor, I think the district court acknowledged that any time a corporation speaks or, frankly, an individual speaks, it's going to get attention. And as they say, there's no bad press, no such thing as bad press. Any time Jewel speaks, it's going to get attention, whether it's saying that Michael Jordan's induction into the Hall of Fame was a great thing and congratulating him as one Chicago company to another, as they did here, or whether they're commenting on the election or a court case. If you look in the news media, you know, there's even news stories about this case where they talk about Michael Jordan and Jewel. And all of these things are getting attention for people. And I think the district court correctly acknowledged any time a company speaks and identifies itself as the speaker, as Jewel did in this case, it is going to draw attention to itself, which is, I think, what you're referring to by the goodwill. And certainly if the speech that it is making is something that the reader agrees with, then potentially it could engender goodwill. If it's something that the reader disagrees with, it could also engender badwill. In this case, Jewell chose to put the congratulatory message to Jordan in, and I think the important thing to focus on in determining whether it is commercial or non-commercial speech is the full context and nature of the page. It focuses on Jordan. It talks about his record. It doesn't depict a grocery store. It doesn't show Jordan standing in a Jewel store with a cart full of groceries and the Jewel logo next to him. This isn't suggesting in any way, shape, or form that he is fond of Jewel, agrees with it, shops there, or anything like that. It is a message from Jewel to Jordan.
Well, it does attempt to link Jewel Osco and its slogan about good things being just around the corner with Michael Jordan as the hometown athletic phenom, for lack of a better way to put it.
And I read that a little bit differently. I see the just around the corner as not an attempt to link him to Jewel, but as a reference to the fact that he's a fellow Chicagoan.
Right, and but that's Jewel's slogan. It's obviously a play on words that's at least an attempt at that sort of linkage and to benefit from the goodwill of the community toward Michael Jordan and encourage patronage of Jewel Osco as a result.
I think that that could be a result if the readers agree with the message. And I think that the
problem... That's the whole point. I mean,
well,
they wouldn't
I,
be doing this for some lesser figure.
I think corporations speak for a variety of purposes. I know, you know, the recent Chick-fil-A example of speaking out against gay marriage. You know, if you agree with them, then yes, they had the lines around the corner of the people who were supportive. But if you disagree with them, then they, on the other hand, have the boycott. And so, obviously, I'm not contending that Michael Jordan is as controversial as that issue.
Not
certainly
a good
not.
Analogy.
It certainly is not. But the problem is, once we start getting into evaluating, this is what the First Amendment is designed to protect against, is the courts getting into scrutinizing these messages in terms of, well, it's okay if you're saying negative. If we had written here, we can't believe that Michael Jordan got up and ranted about all these people when he accepted his Hall of Fame award. If that had been the message, if it had been a negative message about Michael Jordan, then would it have been okay because it wasn't engendering goodwill if you assume that the readers all love Michael Jordan? And because it's a positive thing, saying we're happy for you, we like you, we support you, we're glad that this happened, then it's not okay. And that's where you get into the problem. And that's where the publicity rights and the First Amendment, when they collide, the line there needs to be drawn to protect the First Amendment. And the Seventh Circuit cases, Commodity Trend Services, going all the way back, Briggs & Stratton, the Seventh Circuit statements of First Amendment law have been clear that where you're going to define what is commercial speech, that you're going to define that narrowly so as to preserve the First Amendment protection and so as not to allow that line that protects free speech to continue to slide down a slippery slope. And I think in this case, to suggest that this message that is clearly a statement by Jewel of its feelings, of its opinions about Jordan, and not an effort to say that Jordan likes us, to suggest that there's a commercial speech component when no products are referenced, no services, doesn't talk about sales, discounts, coupons, promotions, it doesn't give their website, it doesn't tell you their addresses. Unless you know what Jewel Osco is, and I'm sure everyone in this room does because it's apparently a big thing in Chicago. I'm from Minnesota. I had never heard of it before this case, so when I saw this ad, it didn't evoke anything to me. But unless you knew that Jewel Osco was a grocery store, there's nothing about this ad that would tell you that. It would just simply be another example of seeing Jewel's logo out there. And I did want to correct one issue. There was some discussion by Jordan's counsel about the trademark registration at the USPTO and how that identifies all of Jewel's goods and services. And that's true, but you have to understand what trademark protection is. Trademark protection protects the use of this logo in connection with those goods and services, not just any time you see it. And so to suggest that by using it here, completely divorced from products and services, is somehow connected to the registration at the USPTO is not accurate. There's also, I think, a little bit of confusion with some of these boards in that the Jewel Osco logo, as Chicagoans you probably all know, has changed over time. They've had different logos, different styles, different slogans. Some of these other ads may have been placed at a time when the good things are just around the corner. Logo was not yet adopted. That was a fairly recent thing. And in fact, as I understand, they don't use it anymore. So these things change and evolve over time. The logo that Jewel Osco used at the time of this ad, and the record is clear on this, was this logo, this whole thing right here. It's not separate. It was used in all forms of communication, commercial and non-commercial, in that way. So there was no intent here to, well, we'll add the slogan to some things, but we won't add it to other things. And I think the record certainly doesn't support anything like that. To the extent... I did want to address the inextricably intertwined issue. The district court also, in his opinion, acknowledged that to the extent that this logo is considered to be a commercial element, even if it were, this speech as a whole still is entitled to full First Amendment protection because the commercial element would be inextricably intertwined with the non-commercial elements. And in the reply brief, Jordan attempts to confine the inextricably intertwined doctrine to cases of government-compelled speech. And I did just want to note that the cases where the inextricably intertwined doctrine was developed did not, the Schomburg case, for example, which we cited in our 28J submission, those preceded Riley and preceded Fox and preceded the discussion of any kind of compelled government speech. I just noted and read this morning about the Dex case that Jordan cited. It was a district court case that was just overturned by the Ninth Circuit. So I did want to bring that to the court's attention as well.
That's a very narrow doctrine, as the court described it in Riley. I mean, I don't know how to interpret this language and apply it, but I mean, the court talked about it's not inextricable unless there's a law of man or nature that makes it impossible to separate the speech, and that seems to me to be a pretty high hurdle.
Well, and I don't think that Riley was intending to limit it that much, but Riley is relying on the doctrine that was set forth in the earlier case of Schomburg by the Supreme Court, and in that case, there was nothing about the conduct there that was compelled by any law of man or nature. It was simply intertwined. And I would submit that the entirety of this ad, with the exception of this one piece here, is clearly non-commercial speech. And the suggestion is that by, and this is a signature. This is identifying the speaker. And I think that Jordan has suggested, I think in his opening brief in the case, that it would have been okay if Jewel had done this but done it anonymously. And that can't be the requirement. And even Jordan doesn't think that's the requirement.
Well, Jewel could have done it without linking its own slogan to the basketball star. And, you know, that perhaps is what creates the contextual problem here. It's more than a signature. The text of the ad does make... You know, sort of a cheesy attempt at that linkage.
Well, and I think that the ad is directed as a message from Jewel to Jordan and not any attempt to suggest that Jordan approves or sponsors Jewel.
It's not just a love letter to Michael Jordan. It's an advertisement for anybody who reads this commemorative issue, and in exchange for the ad space, they agreed to stock the edition on their shelf, so there is an economic motivation to it, and it is plainly aimed at generating goodwill off of Michael Jordan's celebrity, goodwill for the grocery store,
and Your Honor,
inviting patronage because of that goodwill. I mean, that much seems clear.
And, Your Honor, my concern about taking it that far to say that if you do that, then it is somehow converted automatically into commercial speech is where you go from there. Because, for example, when I go home today and I update my website for my law firm to explain my experience and I say that I've argued this case at the Seventh Circuit where Michael Jordan was suing my client. Well, now I've got his name on my website. Have I linked him to me? And I've got my name and my firm name and our trademark and our slogan on the website. I mean, it starts to become really difficult when you take something that is not an attempt to steal his publicity, to suggest an endorsement, to suggest
that's a merits question. The argument that you've now moved into is a question of whether the Lanham Act was violated or the state statutes were violated. And that merits question is separate.
And, Your Honor, I guess I don't view it that way. I view it as part of the determination of whether it's commercial or non-commercial speech in this context, which is why I'm saying I think that the logo here was done to identify, and that's why it doesn't transform the non-commercial speech into commercial speech as compared to an attempt where you're using the logo specifically to suggest an endorsement or an approval or a selling of a particular product. And I don't think anyone denies there are no products or services of Juul anywhere referenced or suggested here. So I see my time is up unless there are other questions.
Apparently not.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zimmerman. Mrs. Sperling.
So I'd like to correct two statements and then briefly address two important issues. First, the endorsement issues that defendants' counsels addressed are not before this court and, in fact, are not even a part of the state law claim. That's separate from the question of whether or not this constituted commercial speech. Second, the court will note that after the slogan, there's a TM, the trademark sign. Juul is announcing to the world that it's using its trademark, and its manual makes clear when it uses its trademark, it's promoting its goods and services. There's nothing in the manual that requires the use of the national advertising slogan when Juul uses its trade name or its logo. So it went way beyond what it had to do to identify itself. It went way beyond what it did when it identified itself in the examples of the congratulatory ads the defendant's counsel provided to this court. So let me briefly address the inextricably intertwined issue because it's something that defendants rely on strongly, as did the district court. There are two reasons why it's incorrect. First, by incorporating the just around the corner part of the national advertising slogan into the statements about Mr. Jordan, Juul made that part of the ad commercial too. That's what Juul's witnesses testified was the tie-in to Mr. Jordan. The Juul's witnesses said would entice people to think about Juul Osco and specifically to think about the products it sells. Second, in any event, the Supreme Court made very clear in Bolger that combining commercial speech with traditionally protected speech doesn't transform the commercial speech into non-commercial speech. As the court stated in Bolger, commercial speech that contains discussions of important public issues or that's linked to a current public debate, and this is the court's words, is not thereby entitled to the constitutional protection afforded non-commercial speech. In Riley, a commercial solicitation case in which a state statute compelled the speaker to include arguably commercial speech, the Supreme Court held that the other speech is protected when they're inextricably intertwined. But the very next year in Fox, the Supreme Court explicitly limited the application of the inextricably intertwined doctrine to situations in which some law of man or nature makes it impossible to engage in the non-commercial speech without including the commercial speech. The court there held that unless the commercial speech is required to be included by governmental regulation, and the court italicized the word required to make it very clear, combining commercial speech with non-commercial speech doesn't render them inextricably intertwined and thus non-commercial. Here, just as in Fox, there was no law of man or nature that made it impossible for the defendants to congratulate Mr. Jordan without using their national advertising slogan to remind customers about the many good things that were just around the corner, as their witnesses testified about. And then I'd very briefly like to address the question of specific products or services. So SuperValue's manual explains that the purpose of the national advertising slogan is to excite shoppers with the knowledge that the products or services are available at their store. And as I previously noted, their witnesses confirmed this. The Supreme Court has identified reference to a specific product as one of three factors to be considered, but the court made clear that not all three factors have to be satisfied for something to be commercial. The fact that the court didn't create a per se rule accords with common sense. There are many ads, and I'm going to show the court four of them. These are ads in the briefs. The Marlboro, Apple, and Nike ads in our opening brief, and the Gatorade ad in our reply, that don't refer to any specific product or service, but that are clearly commercial. And in fact, in two of these, the Nike and Gatorade ads, they use Mr. Jordan in their ads, and I might say pay him a great deal of money to do so. The rule that defendants argue for would allow any company with a sufficiently recognizable trademark or logo to appropriate Mr. Jordan's identity and use it without permission or compensation. The rule defendants argue for would write the right of publicity out of existence altogether. Defendants not only chose to use their stylized brand logo, but they used their advertising slogan, and they linked it to Mr. Jordan. And by the admissions of their own witnesses, the whole purpose was to entice people to think about their store and to think about the products it sells.
Sperling, what if one of the two major dailies in Chicago, obviously their masthead appears on the first page, but in the interior of the paper, on the occasion of induction, they choose to talk about our notable neighbor and his accomplishments. And they just use a, well, maybe you could use the shoes or a picture with the rings. Now, what do we make of that case?
That'd be fully protected. So this is the line of cases in which there's no product or service that's being sold. What's being sold is the speech itself. And there are a series of cases. The cartoons case is an example of that that's cited in the briefs, where a newspaper is a good example, reports on a matter, and even offers commentary on it. It's fully protected because they're not selling.
I'm not talking about a sports page, you know, covering it in the sports section. It's just a decision to make you feel good about the Tribune Company or the Sun-Times Company and its decision to commit space that otherwise would be advertising, I suppose.
Well, the courts have distinguished between when you're selling a product or a service versus when you're selling the speech itself or promoting the speech itself. And I think it fully affords with our First Amendment values to have a different standard here. This wasn't that situation. This was so obviously an attempt to wrap Jewel and Osco in Michael Jordan for its own benefit. There's no reason they had to go beyond using their trade name or even their logo. But they did it, and they did it intentionally. They used the national advertising slogan. They linked it into the statements of Mr. Jordan, and it's no surprise why they did so. They wanted to have the benefit without having to pay for it. I might add, by the way, this commemorative issue, it has paid advertisements in it as well, and there's no distinction that just because you provide services as opposed to receive compensation that it's not a commercial use. We ask the court to reverse the holding of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Farley. Thank you, Ms. Zimmerman. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will...